Mackie and Judd are back.
Hashtag intense.
On 1500 ESPN.
All right, the show is Mackie and Judd fill out this week on vacation. Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune columnist, joining me for the program today. Brian Murphy in tomorrow, as I hopefully get my voice back by tomorrow completely. We're joined now by Jeff O'Brien, attorney at Lohman Abdo. And Jeff is going to join us on a semi-regular basis here on the Mackie and Judd show to sort out legal issues. And Jeff, there are no shortage of legal issues when it comes to sports. So welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Thanks, Judd. I'm glad to be here. I'm doing well, and you are absolutely correct. There is never a shortage of legal issues when it comes to the sports world.
So let's start off in downtown Minneapolis, where the Vikings are fighting Wells Fargo in a lawsuit because Wells Fargo evidently wants to put up what the Vikings consider to be signage that is going to infringe on their deal in their new stadium with U.S. Bank. It sounds like it's gone through the court system once now. A federal judge refused to order Wells Fargo to immediately cover up its rooftop signs, but the case will proceed. To me, this seems pretty simple in the sense that the Vikings own a portion of their stadium. I guess my question would be, why can they tell somebody across the street what they can or can't do?
Well, Judd, the whole dispute, it's actually a breach of contract dispute. The Vikings and Wells Fargo have what's a signage agreement that they executed together. When the stadium was authorized by the legislature and when the Sports Facility Authority was created, the Vikings, as part of the legislation, were given certain control over the stadium site, which is not just the footprint of U.S. Bank Stadium, but it's the surrounding area, and that's where this is an issue, because Wells Fargo is constructing two office towers immediately adjacent to the stadium, and of course now you have the situation of their number one competitor, U.S. Bank, paid presumably a lot of money for the naming rights for the stadium,
sure,
only to be having their competitor's logo being in view of aerial shots from the blimp and from cameras whenever there's an event at the stadium. And so the Vikings and Wells Fargo entered into an agreement specifying the types of signs that Wells Fargo could put on the sides and on the roof of the building. And that's what this is about, is a misunderstanding, in my opinion, as to what the contract says about what Wells Fargo can do on the top of the building.
So do you think this is a case where the Wells Fargo people, though, looked at it and said, yeah, you know what, let's push this as much as possible? Or, you know, at least had a strategy of, well, we'll agree to this and then we'll put up signs and see how they react?
Well, what happened was there was at the time that the agreement was entered into, and what the agreement says is that part of it is the Vikings wouldn't object to Wells Fargo seeking an amendment of Minneapolis's sign ordinance, because at the time when they entered into the agreement, the Minneapolis ordinance didn't even allow this any kind of rooftop signs like what Wells Fargo was proposing to do. And what happened later is Wells Fargo pushed an ordinance that allowed some things that maybe weren't contemplated by the contract, particularly. Whether or not the signs could be lit. And that's what really, okay, I think, part of the fight is. The contract says nothing about whether or not the signs can be lit. It just says non-mounted, you know, painted-on signs. And so I think, if you want my opinion, both sides, I think, are a little bit right and a little bit wrong here.
Jeff, hey, Chip Scoggins from Star Tribune. Is this sign ordinance, is that pretty typical for stadiums around the country? Because this is something I've never even contemplated thinking that it would come up to be an issue.
I think every city is different in terms of the signage that they would allow it within their city on buildings. And so it's a kind of a separate issue in that when the Planning Commission approved the Wells Fargo Towers, at the time the ordinance, it didn't even allow for signs on the rooftop like this, but Wells Fargo wanted to do it. They indicated that they were going to seek an amendment, and so that's where this whole issue arose, where the Vikings and Wells Fargo attempting to come to an agreement in terms of the parameters of what was going to be on there before Wells Fargo went in and asked the city council to amend their ordinances, because the cities amend their ordinances all the time for building projects, so that's not uncommon. I would also say it's not uncommon for, in terms of a deal like this in the stadium, for a team to, for the Vikings to be given what would seemingly be an excessive level of control over the surrounding area,
which is exactly what they want.
Yeah, and you look at what's going, so I would say it's not. You look at what's going on with St. Louis right now, where after the Rams left for Los Angeles, they're still paying the bonds on a stadium that's not going to be used now. So it's these cities do in a way give away the farm when they're trying to attract or keep their NFL franchise.
To your point, Jeff O'Brien, the Vikings sold the naming rights for the stadium to U.S. Bank for a reported $220 million over 20 years. So I'm sure they told him at that time, nothing will interfere with the blimp shot showing U.S. Bank and not Wells Fargo.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, yeah, and so the Vikings, what happened so far, it's been in court so far, Judd, with the on a motion by the Vikings for an injunction. They tried to get a preliminary injunction, like you said, trying to get Wells Fargo to cover up the signs. Mm-hmm. The judge said, no, there's a four-factor test the courts use in that case, and he said that, well, the Vikings didn't meet their threshold, but he did. One of the factors is likelihood of success on the merits, and the judge did say, well, it's very likely the Vikings would succeed. So I'm not saying that the judge is going to tip his hand, but it's certainly something that I would hope and I would think that the Vikings and the Wells Fargo folks are going to be able to sit down and figure out a way to reach an agreement on this before this ever goes to trial.
And Jeff, the judge also said the one thing that you read all the time in these suits, which is, I don't understand why the parties can't come to an agreement. How many times do you, because I think judges have all these leagues and teams come into court and they're like, we've got real cases to handle. Just come to an agreement. And so in this case, it looks like the judge said the same thing, which is, I don't get why you can't come to an agreement on a sign.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, our court system, whether it be state or federal, and if this case was in state court originally and removed to federal court by Wells Fargo, the court system is set up to incentivize parties, particularly in business disputes, to resolve their issues short of going to trial. The judges have constitutional obligations to hear criminal cases first. So business disputes tend to sit, whether it be in state or federal court. You know, there's magistrates, there's required mediation in both levels. So, like I said, I would be really surprised if this goes all the way to trial. I would think that the parties are probably talking now, trying to reach an agreement, and somewhere along the lines of, okay, we'll go back to the painted signs we have, but you have to, the contract didn't say anything about being lit. You have to let us light them. And I'm sure there'll be some verbiage in there, maybe even saying they can't have them lit at certain times, maybe when Sunday night football, can't have the Wells Fargo signs lit because of U.S. Bank being on the stadium, who knows, but my guess is they're talking and trying to resolve this.
Jeff, I wanted to see if you could maybe shed some light on this Peyton Manning story that's surfaced this week, and there's a report out of the New York paper that brought up a lawsuit from years ago from a former trainer who was involved in a situation with Peyton Manning in the training room. And the report from the reporter, he got a copy of something that was titled Facts of the Case that came from her lawyers. And it basically spelled out her version of the events. And I think a lot of people, myself including, initially thought, okay, that's exactly what happened. But can you maybe explain to this how that's just her version, right? Not the version of the court or what Peyton Manning's version was, because that was settled in sealed documents, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, these are long settled cases, and it really shows you the power of the social media era, right? I mean, these things allegedly happened, back in about 1996 or something, while he was still playing at Tennessee in college. And this is the first that I think any of us have heard of these. But now we have Twitter and Facebook and all this, and suddenly, someone writes a reporter that writes a story, and there's people alleging he may have some kind of vendetta against Peyton, and why are you bringing this up now? And you're right, but they you always got to worry about the context of when you take court documents and write about them or publish them, because there's always two sides to a story. And I know a little bit about this so far, but I don't necessarily see this going anywhere. I know Peyton isn't saying anything on it, and I'm sure that his attorneys are advising him not to say anything about it, because he may have confidentiality obligations because these were settlements. He probably can't say anything about this. So I've seen a little bit of hate directed towards the Daily News reporter that that published it. Some kind of people kind of discrediting him. So we'll see where it goes. You know, Peyton has got the, you know, this Al Jazeera report out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But his, you know, whether or not there was HGH shipped to his house in the name of his wife. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that end up in a defamation lawsuit at some point if he's trying to clear his name. So, yeah, a little bit of, like you said when you started, Judd, there's never a shortage of legal issues when it comes to sports.
And the one thing I think he's culpable on, Jeff, is my understanding is when they had that settlement, there was a, what do you call it, a confidential agreement. They were not going to discuss it. But then he writes a book with his father years later and brings it up. So that's a breach of that, correct?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I mean, and you know, that was, I think, what the second lawsuit was about. There was the original lawsuit related to what transpired between himself and this trainer and this other player in the training room, and that was settled. And then this second lawsuit was a defamation suit that the trainer brought against him, like you said, Chip, based on some things that he wrote with his dad in their book together. But again, both of these are settled cases, so it's a little bit puzzling why these things are coming to light now when the cases were settled some time ago.
Jeff, take me down this path with a general question from me. How dangerous is it when a reporter who's not a lawyer gets their hands on one-sided court documents? And because the woman's case is incredibly compelling and interesting and damning to Manning, but when you write that almost as a column, how dangerous does that become when you, because to me, if that was my story, you got to go to the Manning camp and say, I've got everything on you. You need to give me your court documents. How slippery is the slope when we start taking one compelling side of a story and the other is never reflected?
Well, from the journalist standpoint, you know, from a legal standpoint, you know, we have the First Amendment, freedom of the press. So, you know, journalists get a wide, you know, swath of discretion when it comes to what kind of stories they can write. But obviously their integrity, their credibility comes into question, like it's happening now with this report, where someone goes and takes, you know, one side of a legal battle and publishes it as if it's the gospel truth when there is another side to the story.
Right.
You read any court case, you know, there's briefs on both sides. You know, there's a complaint and then there's an answer. So this is why that we have lawsuits, right? Because there can be differing perspectives of different contracts and different disputes and things like that. So, like I said, press gets a discretion in terms.
We get away
of
with a lot. You can say it. We do get away with a lot.
But and you guys know this. It's your reputation on the line. If you write things out of context to trash somebody's reputation.
Bingo. Jeff, thanks so much. I'm sure we'll talk soon. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Jeff O'Brien, attorney at Lohman Abdo, who's going to join us on Mackey and Judd to sort things out. Very good stuff.
Yeah, very good.
And Dave...